Happy Canada Day yesterday. How did it go? You're, of course, a dual citizen. How did you enjoy July 1st?
It was good. Just a quiet day at home. Nothing big. It's hard midweek, eh? It's hard to do much.
Yeah, no, it's weird for sure. And, of course, in our industry, it's normally a day that would not feel like a holiday with your background being in management. This would be an incredibly busy work day where you might even be chatting with people at 12:01 when the clock switches over to July 1. It does feel weird without the frenzy, so to speak.
Well, my most memorable July 1st was when Brad Richards signed, and I was in Afghanistan visiting the Canadian soldiers. We were still in the war zone then, and I was in Afghanistan, and we presented our offer to Brad Richards, which I think was 6 times 7. $42 million, and the agent actually said to Dave Nonis, who presented the offer, "You're kidding, right?" He got 9 times 7. I think he got $63 million or 7 times 9, whatever it was. But it was way, way more than we were willing to furnish. So he signed with, I guess it was, I want to say the Rangers then, and then the bizarre part was I got hammered in the media by one guy, Steve Simmons, for being in Afghanistan. And I'm like, I had a live landline from a colonel's office in Kandahar. My cell phone worked. I had a live computer link up. We were right on top of it. And we made offers to 4 players, but Ed Jovanovski was one, but we were only willing to go like 3 years, and he got 4. Brad Richards, we were only willing to go as far as we went, and he got way more. And we were like, okay, that's kind of, we budgeted for what we're going to do. And then this one guy said it was outrageous that Brian Burke was visiting the Canadian soldiers on July 1st. And I'm like, well, that's when the trip is, so that the soldiers aren't alone on Canada Day. And I was over there with a bunch of NHL alumni, and I'll never forget that. And you imagine, I'm wearing a flak vest and a helmet, running the risk of rocket attacks, and I'm getting hammered for being there. And we made our offer just right on time. We were right in the queue, and it wasn't close to good enough, and good for Brad Richards. But I'll never forget that July 1st.
July of 2011 was that signing date. 9 years, $60 million, Richards to the Rangers. And the other thing that would be funny, a guy taking shots at you, is if there was a day for GMs not to do things, it seems like July 1's filled with more landmines and errors than it is home runs and slam dunks.
Yeah, lots of mistakes made on July 1st, but we always set our prices in advance, and we always said, okay, we're going to go this far and not a penny more, not a year more. And the mistakes that are made on July 1st are usually term mistakes, not cash mistakes. But we didn't want to go farther than 6 years, and that contract was bought out. That a lot of people view that as maybe the worst contract in the history of the league.
Jeez. Do you have a favorite July 1 signing? I see sort of Zdeno Chara in this modern era as like the only one that not only provided value, but he just absolutely not, you know, how could he beat that expectation? Well, he crushed it. He was way better than that deal, but those are hard to find on July 1.
Yeah, you get guys that help for what typically happens is you go long and the guy comes in, he's a productive player for a year or two or three, and then you're just longing to get rid of that contract. Like David Backes, who's a really good guy and a really good player, I think that was a July 1st contract with Boston. And the term is what kills you on those deals. It's not the cash and it's not the player. It's that the player outlives his usefulness.
How did you enjoy or dislike the draft lottery on Friday with an unnamed team winning first overall and another lottery on the way to decide who it is?
Well, I'm going to sound like a cranky old man, but I've been riding this horse for a number of years. You know, when we started doing the entry draft in the NHL, same in football, same in basketball, the key principle is that teams pick in inverse order of finish in the regular season. So the worst team gets the best player. Then teams tanked, and we said, okay, we need a lottery. And we had a lottery where a team could move up no more than 4 places, I think, so that the best teams or the best players still went to the worst teams. And then they changed it a few years back where every non-playoff team had a shot at it. And we've seen some really poor results where a team that just missed the playoffs with 90 points or 85 points could move up 8 or 9 spots. And I just don't think that's right. I don't think that's what the lottery was designed to correct. And I think there should be five teams in the lottery. So you tank, the best you're going to get is a 25 or 30% chance of that player. And there's a good chance you're not going to get him, better than the chance you're going to get him. So you better think hard about tanking. And to me, that's enough to discourage tanking. And that's what it should be, five teams. This year it should have been seven teams. And the fact that a team that was on pace to finish with 90 or 100 points now has a 1 in 8 chance of, if that team's knocked out in the play-in round, that team has a chance at the best player and clearly the best player in the draft. It's not right. It's not fair. I have no idea why more people aren't outraged by this. And I think the answer is because each marketplace that will benefit from it thinks, well, this is great. And it's great excitement. Now the second draft lottery will be watched with great interest. Well, I agree with that. It is exciting. It is interesting. But it's not fair. And everything we do should be designed to be what's true to the system, what's fairest in the system, which team deserves the help most. I don't get this. I'm outraged by it. And if it turns out to be a 95 or 100-point team on that pace, they got to fix this.
I don't have any problem with it at all, but I also, the primary principle, your starting point is where I would say we don't need this, which is that worst teams get best players. But that is the North American pro sports environment. So if we are going to do that, then yeah, Detroit shouldn't have to pick four. And if we are trying to work for parity with the draft, and if we are rewarding horrible seasons to try to make a team more respectable, then yeah, they shouldn't have to pick four. They might have to wait a year, two, 3 years for someone they pick at four to get to the team.
Yeah, no, it's not right. But it doesn't seem to outrage anyone but me. And I'm happy to be on an island. Like, people say to me, this is your beef. No one else seems to share that beef. And I'm like, guys, I'm very content to be on an island if I think I'm right. I'm very content to stand alone if I think I'm right. This is wrong. And it's going to look awful for the league if a 90 or 100-point team gets the best player, gets Alexi Lafreniere. It's going to look terrible on our league.
I think he'll be going to a real good team. That's the other element. He's not going to have to lose for 5 years, but you're right. He could help a lot of teams that aren't going to get him now. It's Brian Burke joining us, our Thursday morning regular here on Boomer in the Morning. Will Nault.
Brian, just want to get your thoughts and maybe take us behind the scenes a little bit, because we're going to have him on in less than an hour here. I'm sure you've seen it on social media over the month of June, the trick shot for Snowy. We're going to have Chris on in about 25, 30 minutes here. Just maybe if you could, your first meeting with Chris Snow, Brian, and what it was like to work with him as of course, one of the first to kind of bring analytics to the NHL.
Well, Chris was a sports writer initially, and then Doug Riseborough hired him to do some statistical analysis for the Minnesota Wild. And Doug asked me to meet with him. I think it was at the long meeting in Florida. And Chris asked Chris the story, but I was pretty dismissive of him, saying, look, there's no way you're going to get a job in hockey at a meaningful level, but let's go through what you got. And so when I came to Calgary, I realized how valuable his contribution was. So I think analytics are really important, but I think it's the third tool in evaluation that we use in the draft. Now, Chris does some really other useful stuff. He prepares a game plan for every opponent. He meets with the coaches and says, here's the statistical analysis of their team. Here's their prevalent, their tendencies. Here's what they prevalently try to do. And it gives us a better chance to defend against that team. But in the draft, we view the analytics as the third tool you reach for in the toolbox. The first is eyeballs. We want viewings. We want guys who know how to evaluate talent to watch him play. And we want to watch live. Video scouting is a good secondary source, but live viewing is important. So you see a player come back to the bench after a bad shift. Coach yells at him. How does he respond? What's his body language? How does he warm up? These are all things you can't get from video. So we use eyeballs first. Number two is our character background on the guy. We want to look into his character, at least in the top three rounds where we have the resources to do it. Talk to his coach. Talk to his Bantam coach. Talk to his billets. Talk to a high school teacher. Look into his family. Are his siblings successful? Like, if a family is successful, then chances are the kid's going to be successful. I don't mean wealthy. I mean really good at their jobs. Like P.K. Subban, his dad was a high school principal. That's a successful job. Two of his sisters are high school teachers, and one I think is now a principal. They've got advanced degrees. They're successful. So that's our second thing. And then we turn to analytics. And the analytics are important and they're useful, but it's our third tool.
The other thing we saw yesterday was the NHL selecting two Canadian cities as their hubs. We saw forever that Vegas was kind of tied to the NHL, but it appears something has come up there. And obviously with the COVID spike south of the border, they have gone with two Canadian cities. Your thoughts there, Brian? Is it the right call?
Well, the NHL does almost everything right. Like, I can beef about the draft lottery, and it's, in my view, a big mistake, but they do virtually everything right. And they waited here and waited, and they looked at the COVID-19 outbreaks, and they said, we're going to move this north of the border. They're also saving a ton of money doing it this way because of the Canadian dollar. So, yes, it makes sense from a player safety standpoint, from a fan interest standpoint, from a time zone standpoint. This all makes sense to me.
And then any thoughts on the CBA? It appears that the things are moving quickly, and obviously the players pushing hard for Olympic participation. The cap obviously is going to remain flat, but by all accounts, I mean, maybe too good to be true that things are just moving along quite quickly here.
Well, the cap's going to remain flat, but it's remaining flat with a 10% deferral and a 20% cap on escrow, which they will hit. So you're looking at a significant wage rollback, in my view, when you compare the 50-50 revenues, which will be decimated, and then you calculate the escrow, it's going to be 20. It's going to be north of 20, but they're going to cap it at 20. So you're looking at a 30% rollback in real wages for this year. And that's not going to begin to cover the losses that the players will have to incur in hockey-related revenues. So I've been talking to teams and just saying to myself, okay, again, maybe you're out there by yourself on this. So I've been talking to some teams. What are you doing for modeling? So many games with no fans, so many games with maybe 5,000 fans socially distant. And the revenue losses are horrific. So it's going to be 20% escrow. I can guarantee you that right now it's going to be north of 20%, but it'll be capped at 20 for this year. We are in a real issue here, and that's why I think it's so commendable that the league is pushing to play. If we don't play, we're going to come back to a wasteland. And if we do play, we're still going to come back to massive revenue loss. Until there's a vaccine, people are not going to feel safe going to sporting events. It's that simple. I will not let my daughters go to a Leafs game until there's a vaccine. And so if they play the Leafs, a home game to the Toronto Maple Leafs is worth $3 million. So if they play the first 10 games with no fans, which they certainly will, almost certainly will, you're talking about a revenue loss of $30 million, one team alone. So you're talking about massive revenue losses that go directly to hockey-related revenue, which is the number that is split between the players and owners. And they're both going to take a massive hit. So you're looking at a 30% rollback this year, and I think it'll be the same next year. It won't change. It'll be worse or the same.
So all that being said, obviously the TV contract speaks for itself, but you know, is it smart then to play 82 games next year? Like, do they have to play 82 next year?
Well, I think I would like to play fewer games anyway. You guys know that.
Right.
So this is the wild card in all this is the U.S. television contract. What's that going to look like? That may make all these losses whole. Who knows? Gary Bettman's a master negotiator. That may solve all these problems, but it's not here yet. And it's not going to fix them now. But that's my guess is the league, if they're willing to say we'll cap escrow at 20%, even though their losses will be much bigger than that, in my view, I think they're counting on the television contract to solve this, which would be great. Because no one wants to see the players take a rollback. But they're going to this year. And if next year, what I would say is I think you can play 82 games. You can start in December and play 82 games, but they've got to schedule better. The schedule is very poor. The NHL has a major problem with the schedule. And if you look, you pick up the book for anyone, any team, and you flip through and you say, okay, Calgary Flames, I'm just going to look here. Oh, let's see. So a couple of trips they've taken where they've gone out to play twice. Okay, Sunday, December 22nd, Monday, December 23rd, the Calgary Flames played at Dallas, at Minnesota, and home. So the airline bill for that is $30,000 a block hour. The airline bill for that would be at least $250,000. to play two games. And so they can't go out and play two games. They've got to go out and play three, four games. They've got to do some back-to-backs. So if they've got to play a team twice, what's wrong with playing Vancouver twice at home? They come to Calgary and play them back-to-back. The second game in a back-to-back is usually pretty entertaining because stuff happens the first night. So I think they're going to have to schedule more intelligently if they want to play 82 games. I would like to get to 70 or 72 games, but in this era of where revenue is so important, once they get live gates back, I can't see anyone supporting that.
He is Brian Burke of Sportsnet, our guest every Thursday here in Calgary on Sportsnet 960. I'm Will Nault. He is Ryan Pinder.
Brian, we had Jeff Glass on in the 6 o'clock hour and asked him about some goaltending stuff heading into this play-in round and the round robin. How would you approach using one goalie, two goalies, or more if you were A, in a play-in round, or B, in that round robin where all it is 1-4 seeding on the line?
Well, and again, this is ugly shoes. So when the league came out and said they're going to make these teams play for seeding, I think that just basically wiped out the importance of being good in the regular season. I think Boston should keep their seed no matter what. They should be the top seed in the East no matter what. Washington, Tampa Bay, et cetera. I don't get it. I don't get it, but it's ugly shoes. So if you and me, the three of us, were sitting on a park bench and a beautiful woman walked by and I said, oh, look at that beautiful woman, neither one of you would say, yeah, but she's wearing ugly shoes. So these are nitpicks. These are small criticisms of a plan that overall makes a lot of sense. I don't think they should play for seeding. But I would try to win those games and get the seeding. I think it's going to be important. But if you were going to try and work in two goalies, or if you're a platoon team, that would be where you would try the second goaltender. If you're Boston, for example, it likes to platoon a bit, then yeah, you try Halak in that series.
Yeah, and I just find that fascinating from a Flames perspective, too. They aren't in that round robin. They are in a best of five, but I know how closely you've watched the club and how tight you've been in the organization and still with people running the organization. Do you get a sense that this is a one or a two-man operation if you get into a best of five and you've won a couple and lost a couple? Would you be surprised at all to see both goalies for the Flames against the Jets?
Only if one struggles. I mean, I think you pick your starter and then he's on a short leash, like where they've used two goaltenders. And neither one has proven playoff success, really. I think you're on a short leash there. If you start Riddick, then he's on a short leash. If you start Talbot, he's on a short leash. So to me, you want to use one goalie if you're Calgary. In my mind, you want to use one goalie. Get one goalie in. If he gets on a roll, leave him be. But I think it's going to be short leash all around the league because it's a five. It's a best of five. Like, you lose that first game, and all of a sudden, the pressure is glacial. Like, it's massive. And so, to me, I would go with the starter. I would tell the backup, you got to be more ready than you are typically because this will be a short leash. We get two quick goals in the first period, we're going to make a change. And that's hard for the starter to play knowing that's the backdrop, but that's too bad. You lose a game, and this, especially, you know, they're playing Winnipeg. And if Hellebuck plays like he did before the pause, they're going to need great goaltending to win.
Yeah, no question. I'm fascinated. It's going to be a great play-in series amongst some other really juicy matchups as well. Brian, always great chatting with you. Glad to hear you had a good Canada Day, and we're happy to have you here weekly. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks, guys.
It's Brian Burke.